Willkommen zu China Connect, dem Podcast des China Competence Training Centers. Mit freundlicher Unterstützung des Bundesministeriums für Bildung und Forschung.
Welcome to another episode of China Connect. My name is Isabel Habrecht, and as always, I'm joined by Oliver Hassel.
Hello, everybody. I'm super glad to be back for another episode of China Connect. I'm Oliver Hasse, Managing Director of ENAM and Co-Managing Director of Humboldt Innovation.
In this episode, we explore the unique traits of Chinese business culture and uncover how it contrasts with the German way of doing business. Our guest today is Mr. Wang Ning, Vice General Manager of Inlun Group, as well as CEO and President of Inlun Group Europe. Inlun is one of China's leading manufacturers of thermal management systems with a strong European footprint and customers including major international automotive OEMs. Based in Stuttgart, Mr. Wang is currently leading Inlun's European expansion. He brings extensive experience from the automotive industry in China and from German-Chinese industrial cooperation at the highest level. Mr. Wang, a very warm welcome to the podcast. It's a pleasure to have you with us.
Hello, everyone. My name is Ning Wang. Hello, Isabella and Oliver. Pleasure to be here and happy to contribute to this topic. Thank you.
Also, a very warm welcome from my side. Mr. Wang, you've been building an impressive career across China and Europe and now lead your company's operations in Europe from Germany. Could you share a bit about your personal journey, what brought you to your current home, which is close to Stuttgart?
Okay, so my personal journey is a little bit unique, I need to say. So I'm Chinese. I was born in Beijing in 1970. So I'm today 56 years old. I'm married with wife, and my wife is German. We talk about later. And a daughter. So we are now, since 2018, we're back to Stuttgart, back home, and living here until now. I studied automotive engineering design in China, and then after that, I graduated in 1992, much early time, and my first job is a state-owned corporation called CNHTC, China National Automotive Corporation, which was the headquarters of the entire automotive industry in China in the planning economy time. So I know how state-owned corporation headquarter works, of course. From there in 1995, just a long time ago, as a very young, 25 years young man, young engineer, I had the honor to join the Mercedes-Benz AG at the time in the car division as the first batch of Chinese car designer in China. So I work in China, also a little bit in Germany to learn to design a car. And then after that, I've been together with Mercedes or Daimler altogether 16 years. Started with car design, and I was purchasing, and I was work also in the joint venture of Mercedes in China. Yaxing Benz is the last joint venture, first joint venture of Daimler in China. And I was working also in Germany as purchasing in Stuttgart. And in 2005, I went back to China for Daimler, because Daimler or Mercedes time established a regional center in China to enhance the investment market expansion in China to compete with, for example, BMW and Audi and build a joint venture. So I was the assistant to the regional chairman in China. They call Northeast Asia headquarters in Beijing. And then after that, I become the head of Daimler truck business in China for Mercedes trucks, vans, buses, and also the Freightliner American trucks for the sales distribution network of imported commercial vehicles in China as a VP of Daimler China Group. And then after my 16 years long journey with Mercedes, I got a chance to move on. In China, I become the CEO of Iveco Group in China. So Iveco is from Italy, of course, we know. And they are commercial vehicle manufacturers. So they have joint ventures in China, big ones for big joint venture in China, daily 45,000 units a year at a time, an engine and heavy duty truck. After 4 years from Iveco CEO, I move on to Shanghai. I become the EVP of Jaguar Land Rover China for the imported luxury cars. So my main responsibility was mainly for the network to find a good dealer to distribute the imported, they call heavy metal, luxurious Land Rover SUVs, basically. And as I mentioned, my wife is German. Actually, she worked as HR executive by Daimler in China. So we met in China during our working time. So until now, we are together 28 years. So it's a long time. She's from Stuttgart. After 20 years for her in China by Daimler, then we decided to come back home to Stuttgart, to her home, let's say this way. And therefore, since 2018, I joined Yinlun, which is, as Isabella mentioned, a leading thermal management supplier of China, and as their CEO, group VP, as well as the CEO, present CEO of Yinlun Europe, back to Stuttgart. So my office or headquarters of Yinlun is in Stuttgart. So that's basically my journey of life and career since I have German wife since 28 years. I also know and understand a little bit of German culture, and based on my 16 years with Mercedes, I can see a lot of difference between the China business circle and the German business circle.
So this is a really impressive career you have. So with all your experience working in German joint ventures in China and now working for a Chinese company in Europe, let's first introduce our listeners to some of the defining features of Chinese business culture. China is a hierarchical society, but from an outsider's perspective, Chinese hierarchies can be very opaque, and it isn't always clear who makes the decisions. Can you give us some insights into the power structure of the different responsibilities in Chinese businesses?
Okay, I think the key word here is power structure and a responsibility in a Chinese context or hierarchy system. And here I want to specifically mention this a key concept, which is called key guys circle or key guys concept. Associated with this keyword is a shadow organization. So what is that? In China, especially in private sectors, all these companies grew up in the past 30, 40 years in a very fast speed. And there are founders or key guys. So those are guys who really drive the company. So in other words, the typical Chinese power structure is there are a group of key guys like founder, co-founder, or their relatives even. And then you have so-called official organization structure, which is more or less very similar like in Germany. But you need to understand that the core decisions are actually made by the key guys, although they might not on the org charts or in the org charts, not in a so-called classic functions, but they are the really decision maker and drivers. The official organization is more focusing on executions. So this is very, let's say, different from the German system. So for example, in the official org charts, you might see a lot of young Chinese managers or for a German partner, they have people who is a counterpart, have a title, but they're young, they can speak English. However, they are not real decision makers. A decision maker is actually being a very small key guys circle or shadow organization. That's very important. So in other words, even in this shadow organization, key guys, they also have certain internal allocation of responsibility. You can call topic owners, means in different topic, investment or operations or sales. In this shadow organization, in this key guys, there are person who are very familiar on this topic, and this guy have a big influence to the real chairman or president. That this is a very important thing in a Chinese private operations. another example, when a German company or partner negotiating with a Chinese partner for a project, very often in the Chinese culture, the so-called official negotiation meeting or tables is not aimed to make a deal. Actually, the main aims is to exchange information, to understand each other, to understand the bottom line, or to understand what they want. And actually, their main job is feedback to the backyard, to the key guys, or to the shared organization. And then for decision, then they come back. So this is the very classical Chinese setup for a negotiation, where for German managers or German companies are difficult to understand. And then therefore, the short term of this structure is the real decision makers are the key guys, are the shadow organization in a Chinese company. The official organization, it's more focusing on execution. So that's the core difference.
That is indeed very different from Germany. So how would you suggest, do I, as a foreigner, identify the person in charge, or at least the correct person to negotiate with?
It is a difficult journey. I think I would advise from very beginning, before the German partner or German managers to make any decisions or judgment, to spend enough time to investigate what's behind. Who are the key guys? Who are the key decision makers? Where is the shadow organization? And then spend time besides official meetings, communications on this topic, and try to understand the real who is who, and then to give right information to those people through different channel. This is very essential.
In one of our previous episodes, we spoke with Amanda Fang about the cultural differences between Germany and China, and in particular, the differences in communication. How does leading a European organization differ from a Chinese business, especially in terms of decision-making, which we've looked at already a bit, communication and responsibility?
Okay, let's start with decision-making. I think, as I mentioned already, that in a classic Chinese organization, it's very clear there are key guys, or you call core shadow organization. These guys making decisions, and they will make a more or less top-down style to the execution level. They are normal organizations. And this is the typical way they're doing. And then the organizations, normal organizations, is more focused on execution. And they, meaning the Chinese younger managers or the managers in the front, they will have the philosophy say, okay, key guys, you are the big brother. You please lead us. Please make decisions. I will do it. So this is the typical structure of in the decision making in a classic Chinese organization. Of course, as I know, while in the Daimler or German organization, it's quite different. There, all the levels will be involved for certain major decisions, strategies. There are a lot of discussions, a lot of meetings. It's top-down together, it's combined. And in the end, of course, the hierarchy in the German organization will decide. But the people of German organization are really involved in most of the major decision strategy and so on. Versus in China, it's very much key guys, decision, top-down, execution, feedback, and then again, another decision from key guys and go down. So these are very different. This is the first difference in terms of decision makings. Communications, also big difference. In a classic Chinese organization, because the key guys decided, normally we have a so-called big meetings or big conference. This can be a staff meeting, can be we call group strategy conference. We call big meetings in Chinese term. In these big meetings, the core message published. However, if you listen to these messages, it's where big numbers, big directions, cover everything. However, this very often, it's not the real targets or the real priorities. Therefore, in the Chinese organization, everybody, not everybody, let's say all the managers knows, not please do not only listen the big meeting messages, but try to find from a small circle, what are the real targets, real priority, real strategy, real the borders of this year or next years. That's very important. And then in Germany, as we know, easier. So the big meetings is big meetings. The message is defined from a standard process. Then they will cascade down to the different level, to the team, and to the person, what you can do from your side to support this big target and message. Versus in China, you need to spend time from a small circle to understand what is real targets. Otherwise, when you as a non-Chinese manager or executive or employee just simply follow the wording word by word from the big meetings, you see when in the execution level your Chinese colleagues do very differently, then you don't understand why. So that's essential. And then responsibility, we talk about the difference. Again, huge difference from my perspective between the Chinese managers or Chinese team and German team. In the Chinese team, we do not make so clear different definition of role responsibility. They don't want. Their logic is, I don't bother to spend time to describe who is in charge of what, but it's more follow who can do it, who can be trusted in my organization to drive this project. It's not who shall be the process owner clearly defined, and who must be in charge, and then we go ahead. It's not like that. And then in the Chinese organization, we do not like to make a so clear border of so-called role responsibility, because the statement I mentioned before, we more make a little bit unclear, and then we go forward. During the executions, we will start to adjust this border. For example, there are certain person must stronger in certain area, or a certain period, then we will more put a responsibility to this person instead of predefined process owner, project leader. It's all about, for example, in the business, the budget, spending of money, investment, hiring people, all these practical business actions. In these things, the Chinese way of defining responsibility, it's very unclear. It's very flexible. It's based on topics, based on the qualification of the leaders. So this is a challenge for typical German managers, because in German organization, it's the definition of role responsibility into the details even. For example, your spending threshold, the investment threshold, or the hiring power of a manager is very much defined either in process or budget and so on. And then the person in this system know clearly what is my upper limit of spending, for example, investment, or how many people I can hire. It's very clearly defined in general. But in the Chinese organization, it's not clearly defined.
You've mentioned one important aspect already, trust, which plays a central role in leadership, especially across cultures. How would you suggest to build trust between Chinese headquarters and European teams?
I would say in a Chinese business culture, the business, we say, start from building personal trust and relationship, not necessarily the so-called professional trust and relationship like in Germany. The personal relationship trust is first before we go other things. That's the first big difference. My recommendation would be, as a German manager or employee or partner in a Chinese context, the first thing we should define, as I said, who is who? Who are the key guys? Who are the key influencer beside the official organizations on my topic? Then, of course, then you should make sure you understand what are the official organization for which is more focused on execution. Where is so-called a shadow organization? You should define that, which is not easy, I understand. And then you need to actively to provide information to the two organizations, not only the official organization, but also called a shadow organization. So make sure that the real decision maker will receive the right information to close the information gap. That's a very essential. And also, of course, by doing so, you can avoid, especially for these key guys, they are Chinese, very often they do not have the overseas operation experience or German culture experience. They very often come to this pattern that China is equal to Germany. So what we can do in China must be able to in Germany. This is the classic thinking, or even without thinking, beliefs. And these, of course, make problems. So therefore, to define, spend time, energy to define who is who, what key guys, what are the official organization, what is shadow organization. I bring information actively to the both organizations to make sure they understand what's going on, and to avoid future information gap, to make sure the key guys will make the right decision.
So let's talk about business strategies. China is known for its five-year plans, and the government also regularly issues long-term strategies which span 10, 20, or even 100 years. Do businesses mirror these strategic long-term goals, or are there different mechanisms at work?
Well, direct answer to your question is no. It's very interesting situation when you see the so-called, I call governmental level, and business level. At governmental level, what you describe is absolutely correct, that we should understand China, although today is seen as a very strong country economically and even military one day. And however, the Chinese government or the nation still in the mode to say China still a developing country. And the whole nation, from the government and the society and the business people, are still in the so-called catch-up mode. So in this catch-up mode, the government have the strong wish and also responsibility in the Chinese eyes. They need to make a long-term plan, 5 years, even 10 years. And they need to define for the nation or for the entire industry, what are the focus, what are the priority for investment, what are the main technical roadmap, and so on and so forth. So this is their job in the Chinese eyes. And then, of course, we know in Germany, or Western world, better say, it's very different because you have the election. So therefore, most of the policy is within the time of the president or chairman or chancellor in his office or in her office. And China is different. The government do this long-term plan to set priorities for investment, for technology, for everything, actually. However, we need to understand at the business level, the picture is totally opposite. If you look at the German companies, especially what I know, the bigger ones like Daimler or I assume other companies, actually the German companies is a very long-term planning oriented organization. So when I work for Mercedes or Iveco, it's normal. We do every year updates on the 3 years strategic planning, 5 years or 10 years, try to understand the long-term market trend, make a long-term strategy, and come back to today or yearly business plan or budget. It's changed, but not often changed on the database. When you look at the Chinese companies, it's very, very different from this so-called long-term planning model of the German companies. It's opposite. The Chinese companies or business level, actually, they are extreme short-term orientated. Extreme, I want to emphasize that, extreme. So what they are interested is what we can achieve tomorrow, next week, or next year. They're not interested the topics, what will happen in 3 years. Okay, I don't know where I am in 3 years, or what could be changed, policy, government, technology, competition. So they do not spend time to think about too long. The only guys in a company to think a little bit longer, like 3 to 5 years, are those so-called key guys. They are the owner or they are the founder. They thinking a little bit longer, 3-5 years, within their small circle, not bothering the entire operations. And then if they see big changes in technology, market, so on, and they will discuss in a small circle, and then they make decision and go top-down. So they again go into this top-down circle. So you will see in the day-by-day business, the most of Chinese managers, except they are the key guys, they think very short, extremely short.
That's another very interesting difference between China and Germany. Could you give us some practical insights? I mean, which strategies do Chinese businesses in the automotive sector follow? Or maybe if you want to even more specifically, what are Inlun's strategies in Europe?
Well, what I see is Chinese automotive industry, the OEMs we call, car makers, truck makers, and automotive components like us, I think the strategy is same and very simple. So our strategy is very simple, is because the growth of Chinese manufacturing capability, in both in product, manufacturing process, financial strength, organization, so on and so forth, the strategy is very simple. I call replacement plus going global. That means pivoting the e-car sectors. We see the e-cars actually from the technological barrier, it's somehow lower than the traditional, we call ICE cars, normal engine cars, ICE cars. It's lower. And the China industry, it has certain advantage, especially on the battery technology and also the digital functions, and also, of course, the price advantage. So there is a slogan in the Chinese automotive circle is we reach 80% function of the German cars or components, but we offer 50% price. It's a slogan, of course. It's not everyday, but it's reflecting the people's thinking strategy that the Chinese cars, trucks, components might not reach 100% the German standard, but 80%. But our price is much cheaper. So with this, the Chinese companies would like to go out from China to US or to Europe, of course, and to other countries, and to replace the existing players. That's the clear strategy of almost all Chinese car makers, truck makers, and components. And of course, in China, there's a clearly overcapacity, over competition in the domestic market. So going global to compete with existing global players are the only way they can survive.
You're right in the middle of discussing the automotive sector already, and a lot has been reported and seen of the rapid development of the Chinese EV sector, electric vehicle sector in particular, and the very fast innovation cycle. Are Chinese businesses, from your perspective, more efficient than European or American ones?
I would say, depends topics and what technology, what is both. I would say in the Chinese circle, a different approach compared to a typical German company, let's this way. What they say is, okay, technology roadmap, a car or components, whatever, off direction. Do not know the details and what will happen when. Therefore, as a Chinese company, typical in the new innovation or technology development, they say they call so-called trial and error strategy. So I know roughly, I don't plan, I don't spend time to understand the details, I just go. I try to make it happen. And then on the development wise, they very much follow, okay, let's make the key function works, no matter digital, in the e-car or components. And then let's roll out to the market, give it to the customer, real customer. Acting is correct. And then pay back revenue to finance my future product development. And they say, okay, then I can receive the real feedback from customer, even complain. And then we do a very fast correction, technology upgrade. So this is their circle. And then go out selling to the market again. It extremely speed development or technology development and bring to market and come feedback and then change again and go back again. So this is needed. They prefer special speed on that. And of course, low cost.
What then are the priorities of Chinese managers and how do they differ from, say, the German managers' priorities? What is considered to be good, or who is considered to be a good manager or a good desirable outcome?
Okay, from my understanding, as let's say good German manager in their business, I think their observations, a good German manager will prefer spend quite energy, time, budget, money to make market, the market trend, technology trend, the competition trend, not only 2 years, but 3, 5, even 10 years. They spend a lot of time on that to increase the business certainty. And then they intend to make a certain long-term plan and come back we need to do today. And they also have the tendency, in my view, that German manager prefer to provide to the customer the first time already almost perfect product, at least 99%. And of course, I also see, recognize also my German managers or Daimler colleagues in the past, when they start to develop product or technology, they have multi-considerations or multi-targets. That means not only a price or profit, but also, for example, environment impact and very important regulation impact or situation. And also even impact to the society, to the future generation. So it's a very multi-business targets. And in the Chinese manager perspective, as I mentioned, the way they are doing business, the first thing they want is speed. I don't want to spend a budget, cause too much meeting discussion to clarify in future. In their eyes, it's waste of time, waste of a budget, waste of resource. The direction, right, it's okay. And then they prefer fast to bring something. Works in key functions and then already bring to the market. Of course, that's very, very different from a typical German manager. They don't want to bring a product to the market which you know already you made 70%. The German manager will say stop. Percent, but the German man, Chinese mentioned no, 70, okay, major cover, let's go. Now see how the customers say. There's a big difference, and of course the Chinese manager from speed, we call a low cost, and they normally not spend time to consider too much of other aspects like environmental impacts, relationary impacts, or even society impacts. They are very much focused on only one thing: profits. Market share, profits, whether customer want it, we call customer first. So customer first, it's over all other considerations in a classic Chinese company.
You know both worlds. Which strengths and weaknesses would you see in the German way of doing business, and in particular in the automotive industry?
I would say in a very stable technical environment, or the technical or technological roadmap is clearly defined for the future, like in the car side in the past, the ICE engines. And if the target is to deliver really high quality and consistent quality levels of product or service, and if the target is to build long-term brand image, and if the target is to follow the so-called continuous improvement process, means step-by-step improving the product or service level and to fulfill the customer demands. In this context, my personal opinion, the German way is better, which I see is proved from Mercedes, cars, and to many other industry of Germany. However, in an environment of unclear future technical roadmap, unclear market competition. So in that context, I see the Chinese, we have the advantage because the future is difficult to predict, you know, roughly, but you cannot tell when and where things will happen, and even whether this technology is really work, or maybe after 3 years, next one will be the replacement. In that uncertain situation, also add on the political situation we know around us from Europe, from US and China. In that context means unstable future. The Chinese way, in my view, is more efficient because you know roughly, then you go forward, you already develop something, no matter product, service, you already bring it to market, it's not perfect. You see, then you quickly change and you quickly update. And of course, and then you are flexible to change. So in that purpose, I think the Chinese way is more efficient. And the Chinese manager will see the German way too slow, typical. Too slow. They're trying too much to make a perfect product or service. But when they make a product, so-called perfect, the market demands change. So they have to redo again. So we don't do that. We do our Chinese way. We do quick. We are closer to the market, closer to the customer. We provide not perfect product or service, but we provide fast correction, fast generation upgrade so that we catch up the trend. Even the trend is changing very fast. We still use this way to adapt ourselves to the trend.
Thank you for describing in such precise details the many differences between doing business in China and Germany. We have learned that you've spent most or basically all of your career as a bridge between these two cultures and working with Chinese and German colleagues. It is generally known, of course, that intercultural teams can be very beneficial, but at the same time, misunderstandings also arise easily. What kind of misunderstandings or challenges have you witnessed, and which benefits do you see for businesses with intercultural teams?
Well, I see, yes, you're right. I spent all my life, career life, on these two cultures, let's say. It's not planned, but I enjoy that, even today. I would say for these cross-cultural teams, what I'm always doing is, as we mentioned in the whole section, is to make sure my German colleagues understand those key differences of Chinese business culture, from the power structure, key guys, shared organization, who make decisions, how the Chinese view of role responsibility, how they see good, like speed, customer first, ignore other topics. Or I make a lot of efforts, time to make sure my German team understand those difference and why. And also I do the same to my Chinese team to make sure they understand why the German colleagues or German managers thinking very differently, like long-term, spend a lot of time on planning, spend a lot of efforts to make sure it's a perfect product before they grow out to the market, and why they do that. So this difference between a German company or Chinese company or German business culture and Chinese business culture is my really main focus, to make sure my team understand this. I don't expect they accept that or appreciate that, but I want to make sure they understand that. So therefore, always advise my people to say, do not think that she or he will understand what I mean immediately, specifically when it's German colleagues, when it's Chinese colleagues. Do not think that. You need to spend time to understand what's behind, what does it really mean from other side. And of course, in my business, I'm very often encourage my people, for example, to go to the Chinese headquarters, not only the managers, but also all levels, especially the non-Chinese colleagues. Then I also advise them, for example, not only attending the official meetings, but really actively attend the so-called the dinners, which is very different from the German culture. Go to the dinner with colleagues, have some fun, have some drinks, have some open talks. And these are essential, although it's very, very different from the German culture, but it's essential in a Chinese environment that you build in personal contact, personal trust, exchange even in the dinner about all these key business topics from the market and to competitor, our problem, their problem. It's very important because those communication in the private base, dinners, drinkings, will have huge impact to the tomorrow, the official meetings. This always I try to encourage my non-Chinese colleagues to go to China, sit with them, talk, drink in a very casual base, in order to influence the official meetings. And also, of course, I also spend a lot of time, even money, to bring the Chinese here to Europe and then let them see the difference. What is the regulation environment? What is competitive environment? It's different from what they think know from China, especially from the social media. Very different picture. But the Chinese guy, even key guy sitting in China, look at the social media about Germany, what's happening in the German market or European market, a huge difference on the what's really going on here. So therefore, I make sure that those key guys understand what they see, what they heard in China from the Chinese social media, a huge difference from the reality and what happened here in the market in Europe, in Germany. And also, of course, when they come, I'm very much encouraging my German colleagues, again, not only spend time on the official meetings, presentation, discussions, but spend time after that, go around with the Chinese colleagues, go sightseeing, go shopping. Good to have a drink, show them the German culture, German food, German beer. And then during those private contacts, time spending together, of course, they talk about business. They talk about why in China we can do that, you cannot do that. Those small talks are much more effective than the big discussion on the official meeting table and become kind of confrontation. I said, don't do that. If you want to change a Chinese man, the best way is not in the meeting room, is in a dinner. Provide different information, true insight of the market. Then they will be much easier to understand the European or German market or situation to support us in Germany. So that's why I'm always doing that.
When it comes to leading intercultural teams or working in intercultural teams, do you have any practical advice or some examples?
Well, as I mentioned, I think my advice is very simple, is talk more to each other. Do not believe the other side will understand you immediately, especially across the culture. Drinking more, that means outside office, bars, beer garden, or Chinese restaurant, to have dinner, to have drink, to exchange of different opinions, even conflicts, and so on. Build personal relationship with your Chinese colleague or other vice versa, because the Chinese colleagues or culture believe the personal trust first, then the so-called facts and figures. And these are essentials, and these are very different. It's not easy for a German manager to do so, and it's also not easy for a Chinese manager purely deal with a German-style working style, only office, only official meeting, only fixed facts and figures. Very difficult. So these two different animals, let's call, I think my advice is very simple. Talk more, drinking more, and then the life is much better in the office.
Thank you so much. I think these are really important points that we just, you know, communicate more with each other. We enjoy each other. We build relationships. I think these are just things that are more important than ever. So thank you so much, Mr. Wang Ning, for sharing all of your insights and experiences with us today. Your perspectives are just extremely valuable. Thank you.
Also, thank you, both of you. It's my pleasure.
Thank you also from my side. It's been very inspirational. And to our listeners, if you'd like to learn more about international leadership, innovation, and cooperation between China and Europe, you'll find further resources and training opportunities at the China Competence Training Center website at www.chinacompetence.de.